lot of people aren't aware that the liver is so different as an organ to the rest of your body. It is so different. It is the only organ, for example, where you can chop out most of your liver and it will grow back within a few weeks. And it does it without stem cells, without all what the textbooks teach you about how your body repairs itself. It's such an intriguing organ. And I feel like not only in terms of patient benefits to crack that problem would be enormous, but I feel like there are a lot of learnings to be had there.
Welcome to the AWS Health Innovation Podcast, where you can learn from entrepreneurs and investors who are driving progress in healthcare and life science around the globe. Hi, I'm Alex Merwin, Head of Growth for Healthcare and Life Science Startups at AWS. Chronic liver disease affects over 100 million people worldwide, yet treatment options remain limited. Today, my colleague Terrence Tan welcomes Quinn Wills, the co-founder and CSO of Oka Bio, to the show. Oka Bio is a biotechnology company using a combination of deep analysis of liver genetics and precision RNA design to develop new therapies for liver diseases like hepatitis and liver cancer. We'll discuss Oka Bio's unique approach, the promise of RNA for treating liver disease, and key learnings from Quinn's long career developing new medicines. Now, in this episode, we had a little bit of trouble with the audio, but it's a fantastic interview, and I hope you enjoy it. Here we go.
Thank you, Quinn, for joining us on the AWS Health Innovation Podcast. Very happy to have you on to grace us with your presence. So maybe let's get started, and maybe you could just tell us a little bit about Oka Bio and about what you all do.
Oka Bio really was set up to do three things better than hopefully anyone else in the liver space. But I think to understand how we got there, I think it helps to understand a little bit about the why. And that is a little bit of a founder story. And my background is originally a medical doctor, geneticist in South Africa. And a lot of geneticists at the turn of the millennium became really enamored with this whole idea of the Human Genome Project and big data, digitizing biology and all the exciting things we love to talk about. Mm-hmm. And so I moved out to the UK at the time and retrained extra degrees in maths and computers and ended up systems biology was sexy in the days when I was doing my PhD. So big systems genomics, but effectively big computational machine learning, statistical learning approaches to quite complex genomic data sets and what we can infer from them. The love story, I guess, in all of that has been liver disease. For me, liver disease is one of the great killers of our generation that has been recognized. It is one of the great prototypes of chronic disease, aging populations, problems that we face as aging populations. And it's something that's just been with me in many ways through my career. When I started in South Africa, I was very focused initially from a research point of view on alcoholism. Now, South Africa, because of the apartheid structures and really impoverished communities, we see a lot of problems with alcohol consumption. And so that leads to things like fetal alcohol syndrome, social issues, et cetera. And so there is some interesting genetics behind that to better understand how we might want to intervene one day. And so I really got into that, and that really got me into this love of liver, as you might imagine, because liver is so central to that story. And from there, when I came out to the UK, I started my first genomics company back then. So that's already 17 years ago, and which is the time of the arc, if you're talking in bioinformatics time, right? And then it was a liver genomics company too. We were seeing this flourish of high content imaging. That was really the period in which high content imaging was coming into itself. And I had this idea of we could maybe either complement or outcompete high content imaging in early stage liver screen. So really trying to understand liver toxicity. And from then on, went through various iterations, and the gig before Oka Bio was setting up and founding the Advanced Genomics Department for Novo Nordisk. And that was very focused on chronic liver disease and chronic disease. So you hear things like metabolic associated liver disease, what you used to call NASH. So it's been there all the while. I think how the data and the liver stories came together to form Oka Bio was really out of frustration. It's been 20 years since we started digitizing biology in a very serious way. And progress has been very slow in terms of translation, turning things into medicine. And I think in particular for chronic diseases, so whether we're talking chronic liver disease, cardiovascular disease, neurodegeneration, I think it's all well and fine doing big human discovery to find new targets. But if you still have to go validate it in mouse models, and the clinical trials are terrible to do, they're just too expensive, too high risk, no good biomarkers, it's just always going to be a struggle. Yeah. And so that is the essence behind why OcaBio is formed. We said it's a big swing, it's a big challenge for our generation. And we're going to try and be the best at all three levels, at doing big discoveries, at big human data. And we can go into details of what that means and how we think about data that gets to the right kind of targets for disease. But we don't just stop there, building the right kind of validation pipeline. So we've set up teams in Taiwan, here in the UK, sitting in our Oxford labs today, and in New York City, which works only in primary human cells, tissues, and organs, right up to taking whole human livers and putting them on machines and keep them alive for 5 days to test out our therapies, to sequence them, to study in real time what's happening in these livers. And it's expensive work and it's really challenging work, but we believe it's important to escape having to always rely on mouse models for your final validation. And then the final one is really about clinical trials. And this was something that I learned a lot about in my days in pharma, that you can have all this great discovery, you can even have good models that you believe in for validation. But if nobody really wants to do the clinical trial, there's no way you're ever going to get that therapy to the patient, right? And chronic disease trials are really expensive. You could easily spend $100 million on a liver trial and it's probably going to fail. And that's just not great statistics for where we want to go in the space. And so our thinking as a company has been about how do we maximize our chances for success in clinical trials? One of the answers to that is we have always focused on RNA therapies. So we are an RNA therapies company, and we believe this is a very powerful modality for liver disease.
Great. Wonderful. You mentioned a little bit around your time in pharma, and we did hear a little bit of the founder story. Would you be able to expand a little bit more on your background and perhaps a story around what's particularly challenging obstacle that you've had to overcome at OcaBio?
Yeah. How long have you got to talk about the challenges of running biotech, right? Biotech is not for everyone. It's a very, even in the many manifestations such as tech bio, it's still a very tough game, only reserved for the crazies. I kid. But I think, and this is not particular to Oka, but it's something that we've tried to hit on, like really address right up front with Oka, is understanding where the big failure modes are in biotech and in companies, particularly when you're working in the transdisciplinary space. Now, I use that word quite intentionally. You'll hear people talk about multidisciplinary science, intersectional science, or with a particular nuance around what that means. I speak specifically about transdisciplinary science, where we're chemists, biologists, computationists, but everybody understands the science of where we're going, but we just have our different domain skills. We're all biologists here. And for me, that is what transdisciplinary science is about, those T-shaped personalities in science, having that breadth and depth. And I do believe that that's important as a success model. However, even with transdisciplinary science or the many variations thereof, but you know, there really have been three failure modes I've seen come up through my career. And so the first law is Clark's third law. So any technology sufficiently advanced is indistinguishable from magic, right? We've all heard this, many of us in the sciences know of this law. And this, the meaning, the intent behind this law is to address what I feel is probably is the first big failure mode in companies, is not being ambitious enough. Biology is really tough. There are too many biotechs, I feel, that only focus on one element of a problem. Again, not the whole value chain, or not thinking big enough about where this journey needs to go. And we always encourage our team that don't fear failure. This is what we do. If you want a comfortable job, go work for pharma. If you want to be challenged and you want to fail all the time, come to biotech. And so that's for us, that's the first big thing is set ambitious plans. There's no getting around that. But the second failure mode, well, this is Murphy's Law. Anything that can go wrong will go wrong. And this is really this whole idea of we are a fundamentally failure-driven science. Fail all the time. It is not an excuse. It's never allowed as an excuse in the company. It's all about fast iteration. I'm a big believer that when you look at individuals, so we're going to draw inspiration from technology, but when you look at individuals like Steve Jobs and Elon Musk, very controversial in their management and leadership styles. However, I think they've been sharing scenes in how they did things. And they have been big believers in iteration. So fast cycles of learning. Rockets are going to explode. You can think about it. You could get all the smartest physicists in the world to come up with all of the clever equations. Those rockets are still going to explode. And there's no way of getting around that. You just got to push through and iterate, right? And if you say it's that difficult to basically just launch a piece of metal into space, can you imagine what it's like on a controlled biology? Right? And that I'm a big believer in that. That's not to say you shouldn't think. It's all about quick iteration. Failure is your friend. Embrace it, Murphy's Law. And the final one is Wheaton's Law. This is Will Wheaton, which many of us know from Star Trek. There you go. He's also a big gamer, right? And he's known for this law in the gamer field. It's called don't be a dick. And I think this law, perhaps of all of our three laws, probably the most misunderstood, because people feel like it's about being nice. It's about baking cakes for each other at work. And it's not. It actually has nothing to do with that. It is about the third failure mode. And this, I think, is probably a difficult one to push through when you're working in transdisciplinary teams. And it's what I think what many will call tribalism. I call it as constantly blaming out there, the externality. We didn't get it because data wasn't delivered on time. Us contractor didn't supply it. Yeah, there's always, because you're always so interdependent, so reliant on a lot of people. It becomes so easy and almost sensible just to hide behind excuses of the other. It's such a natural human thing to do. And we try very hard. And the company really to say that's not an excuse either. We're there to support each other, work with each other, and we don't blame each other. People will fail. Don't be a dick about it. And those are really, for us, I think, for me, one of the big learnings. I'm not going to pretend that I still don't entirely suck as a leader. It's so hard. Science is hard. People are harder. But when you're trying to bring together high innovation groups, I feel for me, both in Oka and elsewhere, it's really about those modes of failures as teams and how you protect against them.
Wonderful. And I think on the other aspects of just building Oka, growing it, were there any particularly challenging technical obstacles that you had to overcome?
Yeah, never start a company during COVID is the big advice I would give to you, particularly if you're focusing on human cells, tissues, organs. There was a period in the world where transplants were not a thing. Transplants shut down and transplants are not being done where we don't have access to organs and tissues, etc. It's been, I think, one of the biggest challenges is very quickly iterating as we came out of COVID and undoing assumptions we'd made during COVID about how things would work once the world switched on again has been a really big challenge for us. We talk a lot about data, AI, and all this kind of sexy science we do. The reality is a lot of our days are spent a data cleanup, getting lots of moving parts to come together so we can put a liver on a machine and test out a new therapy. And it was a steep learning curve for all of us coming out of the COVID world, I think.
Thank you for that. Perhaps the next thing would be to see if you might be able to share with us a few customers who are currently using your solution at Oka Bio and what benefits are they seeing?
So we were set up to be a therapeutics company, right? So ultimately the people at the end will be the patients once we get through clinical trials. But like a lot of people in our space, part of that journey is bringing in pharma partners to work towards that. And so we haven't made any announcements yet, but watch the space. It will be very short. Two very exciting pharma partnerships. I'm very excited about them. Those two partnerships are galvanized around this idea of how do we creates a lot of big, high quality, right kind of data to discover new targets. And how do we take on very big, challenging problems to develop therapies all the way through to regenerating livers? So it's going to be a very exciting few years for Roka.
Oh, wow. Regenerating livers is definitely something I'll be looking out for.
It's a very interesting. The liver is, maybe you're aware, but a lot of people aren't aware that the liver is so different as an organ to the rest of your body.
Yeah.
It's no different. It is the only organ, for example, you chop out most of your liver and it will grow back within a few weeks. And it does it without stem cells, without all the textures to choose out how your body repairs itself. It is such an intriguing organ. And I feel like not only in terms of patient benefits to crack that problem would be enormous, but I feel like there are a lot of learnings to be had there.
Yeah, 100% agree. And perhaps we can just ask, what's your ambition for the next few years?
So our ambition really is that we've been, in many ways, we've gone through a similar journey to what a lot of biotechs go through the first few years, and that's what we call building the jumbo while it's taking off. First round funding was all about building the initial data sets. The next round funding was building out the platforms, and now we're moving on to the clinic and translation of this. So that's really been the thinking and journey the last 3 years. Now for us, the next 3 years are really about seeing how far we can push things. That's our goal, to be the best in those three pillars: discovery, validation, translation.
Fantastic. And perhaps here's one, sort of what goals would you have for your team?
Good question, because we actually just had our coming north site yesterday. We're thinking about a strategy and what's the best way forward for us. And I think if I had to summarize the goals for us as a team, it's very much about moving from early disease. The last 3 years are very much focused on how the liver metabolizes, how cells die. What I tend to think of is that the basic fuels behind a lot of chronic liver disease. Now what we're moving on to is really about thinking about what many think of as cirrhosis. So big tissue remodeling, scarring, how cells regenerate, not just don't die. Those are big challenges, and be focusing all our goals around how to achieve that in the next 3 years.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing. And I suppose my sort of, for the clinicians amongst you, this would be my safety net question of when we wrap up today, and you think back on our conversation, what question do you wish I'd asked you?
Yeah, you're AWS. You've not asked me anything about data. Shame on you. I will answer the question that I just, because it's an interesting one. And I'm quite vocal. I think if people look around and see what I put out there, I like to think of my viewpoint as a cautionary tale in the world of AI. I've been around long enough. Been here since the Arc. Since Noah first took an abacus onto the Arc, and we called it data. And we see a lot of fashions and a lot of waves, and these are all very exciting. My concern is, when I look at investment, and investment markets are really tough right now, when I look at investment in AI, there is this almost irrational belief that AI is going to be a cheap, effective solution to solve a lot of problems. And this, I can see where this belief comes from. It's rooted in things like generative AI and ChatGPT. And I think what some won't always fully appreciate is that AI is only ever as good as the data it's fed. And ChatGPT gets brilliant data for free. It has the world at its feet in terms of the entire internet and human culture and how we think and the data out there. We don't have that luxury in biology. Data is very, to generate the right kind of data at scale is very expensive. I'll give you an example. Our third big project was we spatially sequenced 1,000 human livers and we mapped. So that means we mapped, and this is RNA sequencing, so looking at function, gene expression, to cells, to histology. We imaged each liver 6 times using AI to pull out histological features, and then we mapped it to about 150 blood and clinical traits. This, in the world of biology, is a huge project.
It's enormous.
What kind of 7-figure sum that cost us to build that data set? That in the world of ChatGPT is hilarious. Yeah. You would never build a model based on 1,000 websites. That's or 1,000 data points, right? That's the challenge. That's my cautionary notes in, and this is also to investors out there, is that there's no pre-launch in biotech. Yeah. AI is fantastic. And I use it myself. I love what it can do for us. Yeah. We also need to, in the world of algorithmic innovation, I think we need to learn to celebrate data innovators as much. And what do I mean by that? I'm South African, I come from farming stock. So I like to tell the story of the three farmers to explain this idea of data and the importance of data innovators. The story goes like this, that there was a village in the middle of nowhere, and unlike other villages around that really struggled with their crops, and to feed the village. This village had three farmers and did really well. And this village did really well because each of the three farmers focused on different elements of farming. And the first farmer, she was very obsessed with the quality of the soil. And so put a lot of effort into getting the right kind of nutrition for the soil, making sure it was rich, the strategy to make sure you can over-farm the soil, and that created the right start for any crop. The second farmer, she was really obsessed with weeds, and know that if you don't look after the crops, you don't strangle out the goodness of the crop. And the final farmer, knowing that the other two farmers had really had got this nailed, focused on getting in the best kind of crops, the best kind of seeds, going all over the land to buy the most nutritious, best growing crops they could get. And it's really the marriage of these three ideas that created for a very successful farm and feeding of the village. And for me, this is really a little parable of how I think about data innovators. The first farmer for me represents people in biotech who are obsessed with technologies. Technology drives what we can do with data and the question we can ask. And so we love that people, we celebrate those people, because without the latest form of single cell sequencing to integrate X, Y, Z, and the platforms to do that, we just simply can't ask the really tough questions. And so we celebrate that kind of farmer. We also celebrate, I tend to think of the second farmer as the unsung hero. These are the statisticians and biometricians who spend all their time obsessing about cleaning up data, getting data into the right format. Mm-hmm. Nobody talks about it these days, but they're not entirely true. Some of us do, but it is a huge undertaking. Spend a lot of our time just trying to explore our data, see what it's telling us, trying to understand the technical effects that happen in our data. It's huge. It's a huge thing in our space that requires a lot of talent and a lot of very sharp talent to dissect that out. And then the final farmer is, in many ways, is we do at Ochre, is our people who focus on making sure that it's not garbage in, garbage out. We have the right kind of data going in. And that is not just running your work on satellites, because how predictive is that data? We put in the money and the time to sequence whole human livers, study them in time. So generating temporal data to see what's going on. And that is the final kind of farmer. And for me, this is, again, just a nice little summary of your data innovation in its new forms is very important. They have to come together. In biotech, that is not cheap, and it requires a lot of talent. As wonderful as AI is, it is only part of that greater solution. And that, for me, is just always the cautionary tale and the excitement of what's going on in our space right now.
Fantastic. Would you say that for biopharma, data is really the competitive advantage?
Yes. Yes. If you ask me, and again, it's a little bit of a fake question, because really all of it's important. But if you ask, if we played that game of, would you prefer better algorithms or would you prefer better data? Getting causal, actionable, context-specific data is worth having the great algorithms.
Yeah, 100% agree. I think not enough. Sometimes we do take data for granted in some parts of healthcare because it's there. But to me, I think for biopharma, data really is an obstacle that has to be overcome for so many startups.
Yeah. Another way to think about it, and again, this is by sort of shout out to investors is we're only just at the tip of the iceberg in digitizing biology and generating the right kind of data at scale. Do not digress too much in terms of investment in that kind of that necessary pain. Algorithms are great, but we have to put the money and time into the data.
Great. And on that note, what advice would you give to fellow entrepreneurs looking to drive innovation in the biopharma space?
So this is a common question I get asked at the end of chats, as you might, and I can understand why. And I always give the same answer is be very intentional with the advice you take in life. When you enter the entrepreneurial space, you will be flooded with advice, most of which is absolute nonsense or just not right for you, right? And I find this, one thing that I find quite amusing is whilst people have become moderately successful, they will espouse their secret success. And you never know for sure whether it was because of those or despite of those that they became successful. Life is also very big factor in life. So my advice to people is always one of the most challenging, but really one of the most difficult things that you can learn in life is learning who to listen to and who to ignore, at what point and how much. And how you do that, I think for me, is about I look very carefully as best I can to see if my values are aligned with that individual's values when it comes to advice, because values shape decisions.
Wonderful. On that note, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to chat with us and sharing your insights. And we look forward to chatting again soon.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us today for the AWS Health Innovation Podcast. If you want to get in touch with AWS, please check out our show notes where you can find a link. If you enjoy the podcast, the best way to support us is to share it with your colleagues and friends. We also really appreciate your reviews and ratings wherever you listen to podcasts. We love hearing feedback from our listeners, so please don't hesitate to get in touch. Again, you'll find all the details in our show notes. See you next week.